Good. I'm glad that none of that got on.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. Are we doing this?
Hey, y'all. This is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'all-itics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
We're recording now. This is
okay.
We have get this episode off the ground, man.
Yeah, we've thought like four times that we're recording as though we've never done this before. But I think we're actually doing it this time.
And you didn't want any of those stories that you just mentioned in the previous conversations to actually.
No, I mean, because all of them, none of them were flattering, to be honest.
But go ahead. Go ahead. What were you saying?
No. We were just talking about how we, you know, I missed you. Did you miss me?
Come on. You have been drinking this morning.
Yeah, it was rhetorical. So I was on vacation, a quick vacation, though. One of those fast turnarounds, but one that is enough to where it restores the smile to your face again. You know, that sort of easygoing, carefree smile that gets erased pretty quickly after you come back. And I was talking to you about my amazing tan, that I've gotten. And I say that facetiously because I'm now just a slight off white instead of like full on brilliant white, you know?
And where you went to the Yucatan, you said, right?
I did, which is an amazing place. And you know, I was the guy who looked like the ghost on the beach, you know, putting on the zinc, full zinc sunblock all over full body. No one else does that. But no one else burns like I do.
So, you're the reason they had sunglasses that stuff on, right?
Yes.
I should know my geography better, but were you in Mexico or does Belize reach up into the Yucatan at all?
I don't think that Belize counts as Yucatan because it's after it sort of comes back again. But it's, go ahead and throw it in. I mean, it's right beneath it. If you, you know, continued on, you'd be right there in Belize right after you get through Tulum and all of that.
But you were in Mexico.
I was in Mexico. Yeah. But we traveled around, using Cancun as the base and just sort of going to these really small islands and towns and places where you just go, you know, do we have to go back? That kind of thing. It's a good life, man. It's a really good life.
Well, your life has been a good life, and it's one I'd like to model mine after. So,
never model your life after me. And I know that you're just ribbing me at this point because you have memes, I've found out. You have actual memes of me, actual pictures that you've taken over the years at work that, you know, make me look deranged. And so I know that you don't want to model your life.
These are unaltered images of you that have been passed around among multiple employees.
I just found that out this morning.
Seriously, I was going to ask you, and this is a serious question. You drove around to different towns?
In Mexico?
In Mexico?
Yes. Yeah. Now, I didn't drive this time. I rode. But yeah, I've driven before.
Yeah. And, you know, I asked that because I have a lot of friends who go down there and a few of them asked me recently whether it's safe. And I'm like, well, I'm sure the resort areas are perfectly safe. Did you have any security issues at all down there?
No, never felt in danger even once. We had people in our families who were like, oh, don't go. This is dangerous, whatever. And I asked them, like, have you ever done the calculations on how safe you are here? Because I'm in the news here and I'm reading this stuff out every day. And there's a lot going on here. Let me tell you, not once there did I worry about, you know, one of the drivers who we were riding with cutting somebody off and that person deciding to shoot all of us in the car. But the thing is as soon as I got back here, I swear to you, the very first random tweet that comes through on my feed is about another road rage death in DFW. It seems like we hear of them, you know, once, twice, three times a week. And no, you didn't feel that there. I mean, there's dangers there. I'm not going to be Pollyanna about it, but geez, folks, we've got dangers here too. You know,
that's a good point. Did you bring beer back?
I did not. I didn't bring any alcohol back. I consumed all of it there.
What are you drinking? What are you drinking today for this episode?
I'm in the refrigerator clean out phase again. And so I've gotten down to my last one. And this is nothing against the Astros, but I have one more Crawford Bock in the fridge with the old Astros colors and all of that on there.
You have a case of that stuff. Every episode
I think I did.
For, for like a month you had one of those.
I think I overdid it with that. I don't know how all that appeared in the fridge, but
maybe Mrs. Wheeler needs to run back down to the store.
Maybe she's a big Astros fan. I don't know. But there was a lot of that in there, and I'm finally getting down to the last one. It's probably about 8 years old, you know, but I'm finishing it. What do you have?
Nice. I don't know how this is more like your speed right here. This is a best made Raz pickle beer.
No.
And if you know the brewery, you know that this is kind of, they do some of the wild stuff. It's Martin House Brewing Company in Fort Worth. We've had their beers before, and they have a certain following, but they have the really unusual ones. I don't think they have a Pilsner or an IPA or anything like that. Let's see what
I'm
this
dying to know how this goes.
Yeah, let's see. I am too.
You know, and is it purple?
Wow.
Is it pickle juicy?
Oh my gosh. It's pickle juicy.
Oh no.
Like, woo.
Can't do that.
It's sour pickle juice with some carbonation in it and some blue.
I'm going to stay with my Crawford Bock. So we have another new acting attorney general. It's like sort of rotating around. Okay. So everybody knows the suspended Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton is awaiting trial in the state Senate. That will happen in the beginning of September. This is really dragging out, I think, you know, beyond what people originally thought it was going to take time wise. And so in the interim, Governor Abbott,
you mean this podcast or
well, both. Yes, yeah. It fits all of it. So Governor Abbott tapped a longtime associate of his to fill the role. His name is John Scott. They go way back to the early days of Abbott's political career here in Texas. And so he turned to him for this. He's turned to him before for the Secretary of State position as well. He is a Fort Worth attorney, and he held the job for 6 weeks and then said, I'm out. I'm heading off to do other things. And so now we have another acting attorney general as we still await this trial to find out if that position is going to be needing to be permanently filled or if Ken Paxton's going to be back.
I don't think John Scott, though, I think he's, and I'm not privy to the conversations, but I think he always told the governor, listen, I'll do it for a minute to get, you know, to get things off the ground. But I don't think he's ever said he wants to do it permanently. But yeah, he's only been there 6 weeks. And as of Friday at 10 a.m., actually, as we record this podcast right now, look at your clock, Wheeler. Friday at 10 a.m., John Scott is leaving as the provisional attorney general in the state, and a woman named Angela Colmenero, who's the deputy chief of staff for Governor Abbott. She is taking over. She has a decade's worth of experience in the attorney general's office. I believe she was the chief of litigation. So she knows her way around the office, and she is going to be the interim attorney general as John Scott departs from this position. Who is John Scott? You know, we've heard John Scott before. He's been on the podcast before, hasn't he, Wheeler? Mm-hmm. He was the Texas Secretary of State for a year. Governor Abbott called him up in October of 21, said, listen, we need you to come down here and help out and make sure that the voting is going okay. One thing Scott did that you may remember, he started the audit of the 2020 election. And he said he found no widespread fraud. So John Scott's been around for a minute. He's not a political guy, but he's a guy that always takes our calls.
Which always seems unusual when you know, these days in our politics, it seems unusual if someone's appointed who doesn't seem overly political. And so he does take these calls. He does take these jobs. And then he pretty quickly says, here, you can have this job back again, which I always admire and think that that's really interesting. And we sort of got into, some questioning. You know, we were thinking about this, like, why did he, you know, step away this fast, though? So not only does John Scott always take the governor's calls, it appears, he also takes Jason Whiteley's calls. And that's how we got him on the line. And here now is newly, I guess, retired acting attorney general for the state of Texas, John Scott.
John, welcome back to the program here. We know we have lots of folks on the podcast, but I don't think, with the exception of Wheeler, that anyone has quite the resume that you have. And I want to go through your LinkedIn here for a moment.
I hope his is a lot better than mine. Otherwise, we're in real trouble.
Well, I mean,
you both can't stick to one job, okay?
I've been accused of that in my career too, so we have a common thread there.
let me enlighten our listeners here and our viewers too. John Scott is an attorney in Fort Worth. That's mm-hmm. kind of the baseline. He's worked in Houston and Amarillo. He was a deputy attorney general for a few years in 2012, the chief operating officer at Texas Health and Human Services Commission, chairman of the board of the Texas Department of Information Resources, has his own law firm, as I mentioned. You probably heard him and seen him multiple times from us as the interim secretary of state, or not the interim, as the secretary of state for a little bit more than a year. And then most recently, he was named to help fill in as the provisional attorney general of Texas when the elected attorney general, Ken Paxton, was suspended. John, your resume is incredible. Tell us how this works. Does the governor call you up and say, hey, listen, I need you to help out? Do you text him? Does the staff call? What happens?
I mean, on the most recent one, he called over and we visited about going over there in the role. And it gets to be, it was more problematic this most recent time because it was really unknown how long the position would last. And so I relayed that I really needed to be a kind of a short-term assignment from my perspective.
I was interested in that because when the governor put out the statement, he said that you would be serving in this temporary period during the Texas Senate's resolution of the impeachment proceedings. And then we get this notice that you're leaving after 6 weeks in the job. And I thought, did somebody ask him to go? Did something come up? But it was just a matter of you thinking that they would have maybe already had this done by now.
I think it was twofold, right? One was I was busy rebuilding my practice, which is down in Austin as well, and spend most of my time in Austin practicing. But so from a very kind of baseline, it's hard to disengage with clients who need you for a purpose and just say, we'll see you when I see you. So wanted to at least let them know when I might be back able to represent them again, with the hope that they would still be around to be represented. And then the second thing was, I really thought the thing would be over.
But it doesn't even begin till first week of September. It's kind of dragging.
September 5th. And and again, that's up to the Senate to decide. I don't want to second guess any judge or jury or whatever their perspective is on their roles, but I they set the time. I was surprised.
John, you're the pinch hitter for Governor Abbott, it seems like and feels like here. Are you going to let that call go to voicemail next time, or you think you're going to answer it when he needs you again?
I might write a book and it just simply says, don't answer it. I'll go out and visit with other people who've answered the phone as well. All kidding aside, every time I've gotten the opportunity, it really is an honor and a privilege to get to go serve the state. And you hear that from people, I'm sure. And some people may think that's baloney. It's not. It is literally, there's something about being a public servant. It fills your heart because you know you're doing the right thing at the right time for the right reason. And that's sometimes rare.
Yeah. It seems like, though, that you get called upon for some these kind of sticky situations, you know. So like when it was Secretary of State, it was, you know, during that time when there's a lot of questions about voting machines. And, you know, we hear some folks in the base saying, let's throw these things out and go to all paper and we don't believe in elections anymore. And now you've got to get in there and figure out how to make everybody believe in elections. Then with, the Attorney General gig, you know, we have this unprecedented situation where a Texas attorney general has been impeached and suspended while he awaits his trial in the Senate, and you're pulled in for that. It seems like those are really thorny times to enter those jobs. Do you get there in the middle of it and think, God, I've got to stop coming in this way?
I should probably think that. I haven't. And I will say that the benefit of kind of parachuting into some chaotic situations, each one, you develop a little more wisdom, a little more experience in kind of what to look for and kind of hopefully how to calm some processes back to, down a little bit and make sure that people get back to the job that they're supposed to be doing on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And so depending upon the situation, that's kind of what we've always run into.
Talk more about that, John. Calming the situation, because Jason's right. They are sticky situations when you land in these things. What have you learned from it, and how have you helped calm things down in both of those offices?
So it was so different perspectives. At Secretary of State, I think it was important to get a message out, and y'all were great in helping get that message out and spread that message. And I think the media helped calm the waters as much as anything by putting really facts out there for people. And so when somebody had a suspicion, we looked into the suspicion and then we refuted it, or we said, all right, this takes a little more investigation. But we wanted to make sure that we publicized that. Over at the AG's office is the provisional AG. It was a whole different role. I didn't feel like doing interviews or anything publicity was going to help the process. In fact, it might have fueled the fire a little bit. And so the real goal at that point in time was to visit with the folks that work there and to reinforce that idea of why they came to work there. And the great privilege it is to get to go into court and say, hey, John Scott, Your Honor, here on behalf of the state of Texas. And that's something that all those lawyers get the right to go in there and say as a result of their capacity. So those first 2 weeks over there, there was a lot of talk about what happens now with the impeachment, what have blah, blah. It was always about the same subject. And it wasn't about the subject about the Attorney General's office. And from my experience there, I knew what normal sounded like. And so after about 2 weeks, people were back talking completely about cases and what is our next step. And that's what's going on back today. It is, they're back to, I would say, as close to normal as it's been since the impeachment, and they're doing a great job, and they got a great new attorney general coming in.
Hey, John, regardless of how this turns out in the Senate with regard to suspended Attorney General Ken Paxton, what's your feeling about the position? Is it you know, does it need some rehabilitation at this point just because of all of the accusations that have been leveled? Not the person. Does the position is the position tarnished right now? Do we need to see possibly more guardrails put in place for the person in that position, whether it be him or a successor down the road?
You know, it is an elected position, and I think those are the guardrails you want with those elected positions, which is you leave it up to voters. And in this situation, the House believes that there were some constitutional issues that needed addressed. They've raised those. And I don't know if we want to add much more to that process in the way of guardrails, because as an elected official, you don't want to divest those who cast their ballots unnecessarily. They cast them for Ken Paxton, overwhelmingly, 50%+. And I think that's something that has to be respected. And I think that is something both the House and Senate, it weighs heavily on their mind. So I think this process that we're going through, as messy as it may seem to the outside, I think it's serving its purpose of trying to get to the bottom line truth that may be out there and give us a resolution.
As someone who's in this sort of group of elite legal minds here in Texas, I mean, yeah, don't be taken aback. You've had some, you know, some high profile cases. You've been, you know, in the Supreme Court representing. You've, you know, done the same thing in a lot of appeals courts and circuit courts. What do you think about the heavyweights on both sides of this impeachment issue? Are you going to be watching this? Is this something where you study?
Yeah, so this is history, and never in the history of the state has this happened. In very few states, and I haven't done an analysis of other states, I just haven't heard of it in my 61 years of life, and quite frankly, it is a rare occurrence, and I think it's one of those things that is going to make for great TV, must-watch TV, listen to podcast, because it is, hopefully it never happens again, and hopefully this comes to a quick resolution. So, yeah, I think it's going to be super interesting to watch just from an intrigue standpoint. Mm-hmm.
John, talk about morale on the is it the sixth floor? Is that where the top
eighth
floor? Eighth floor of the Attorney General's office. Well, what was morale like when you landed there? Were you welcome? Did people, were they suspicious of you? And you talked about meetings too. Did you have to have a lot of one-on-one meetings and you know, after dinner or after hours dinner and drinks and stuff to get people kind of back to where they should be?
So they were extremely accommodating, and I I don't want to get into their mindsets of what, because I don't know, and I don't want to speak for them. What I felt was that, and my goal coming in, I took the smallest office I could find on the floor. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that was to make sure that they understand I was last and least amongst the equals there. I was there to help serve them, serve the state. And I wanted to make sure they understood it was literally there in a humble role. I wasn't coming there to dictate to them, but I wanted to make sure that they understood the rest of the state was there for them and their mission, and to make sure that the mission that came from the eighth floor as they operate the rest of the agency was one of confidence that this place is going to be around for the history of the state of Texas. When Texas stops, they'll stop being an attorney general's office. Hmm. And to reinforce that mission statement, which is, hey, you've got a great honor and a great privilege to get out there and represent the citizens of the state of Texas and to defend the laws of the state of Texas. Get to it.
And you purposely did not go to the corner office there, or the mahogany corner office, on purpose, it sounds like.
Yeah, I also think that might have been disrespectful to General Paxton. He is still the attorney general of the state, and that's his office. That's not the provisional office. I actually got a sign made up that says provisional attorney general that stuck on the side of the little door. And it's a, you know, I hope the message was received that when you come in these places, you really should come in at least among equals if you're going to try and help stem the tide of chaos.
Is that a tough line for you to walk in a way? Because, you know, we know how, you know, Democrats might feel about the attorney general, but even within Republicans, there's a real split. He has his detractors and he definitely has his supporters. Is that a tough line for you to walk when you walk into that role so as not to ruffle feathers on either end of that spectrum?
Yeah, I think from my perspective, it really was easy because it was telling the group, the staff, the attorneys, let's get back to basics. Let's get back to representing the state agencies. Let's get back to when there's a just case to go file, let's go file it. If we've got issues with the federal government on rules, let's go file it. There's plenty to do on a day-to-day perspective. And those are the matters that, you know, at least we're in a defensible position always in those matters. And I think that's the safe space. Because that is the role of the attorney general's office in this state, is to defend everyone.
And a few announcements were made when you were in there those 6 weeks. The opioid settlement was announced, I think $300 million. Describe what you did every day when you weren't talking to staff. What type of role were you actually playing in there?
So you end up reading a lot, which is not necessarily the favorite thing to do. But a lot of it goes back to AG opinions. A lot of it goes to here's potential lawsuits, here's potential settlements that we may want to enter into, and then getting into the details at some level, not to necessarily overrule someone, but to make sure that the decisions that were made were the proper ones. So you have to become informed enough by reading the underlying information and to the extent needed to go read the cases that are cited in those to know whether we're making the right choice or not.
So it sounds like
up a lot of days.
What's that?
It eats up a lot of hours in the days.
Yeah. Down in those legal briefs. It sounds like you sort of took the same tact with this, with opening up those lines of communication, as, you know, people talked about when you were with the Secretary of State position. You know, a lot of elections officials across the state in reporting had talked about how you sort of opened the lines of communication with them at a time when there was sort of a low point between a lot of elections officials and the state. There were a lot of accusations about, you know, elections not being trustworthy and voting machines, et cetera. And again, we had, you know, some people in this state clamoring for more. And you know, you did the audits. And I think some people were expecting like, oh, we know what these audits are going to come up with. You know, this guy, you know, for a very brief time helped represent, you know, former President Trump when he was challenging the results in Pennsylvania. And it didn't come out that way. It was determined that this was a clean election here in Texas. And some folks said that really may have helped to restore some confidence. Is that something that you're most proud of?
It absolutely is. And I think the other part about the communication with a broad spectrum of the election administrators and county clerks that run the elections around the state of Texas, you get informed from a different perspective. And so to me, the closer you can get to a 360 degree view of any issue allows you to make informed decisions that are in the best interest of everyone. And the one thing that I think it's the lawyer in me, which is that evidence, proof, is what you need to have the conversation based upon. And that was the goal of that audit. And it's also been kind of the goal as the provisional AG, except visiting with the staff lawyers. I mean, we tried to meet with almost every attorney in the place in groups and find out their concerns and be there for any answer, question that they may have to give them an answer. And so did a similar tact, but it was with a different group.
And you don't have to name any names, but did you in either of those circumstances get any pushback from, you know, any high profile folks here in the state saying, hey, you know, we wish you could, you know, be a little bit more political or kind of, you know, lean things in the way that we're thinking a little bit more?
No, well, I think everybody. Name names if you want to, John. Go ahead. Name
no, names. No. Yeah, actually do that.
I will say that every legislator and every elected official that contacted me had nothing to say other than very, very glowing support for anything that we might need over there to help keep the mission on course. Hmm. It was an unmapped territory, right? Nobody's been going through this process. And so there wasn't a real book to pull off a dusty shelf somewhere and say, oh, this is how you do it. It just doesn't exist. And so we went back to kind of the basics and what the purpose of the organization is.
John, I saw after that brief representation of former President Trump in Pennsylvania there after the 2020 results that you had been quoted as saying that you never wanted to do election law again. You had just had your fill with that. First of all, is that quote, at least the summary of that quote, correct? And can you explain it if so?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, look, representing businesses suing each other, it is awful nice because worst case scenario, you got one half of them that hate you, and hopefully it's the opponent at the end of the matter. With what went on during the election, it seemed like we were able to alienate everybody. And so, yeah, election law seems to bring out the worst in most people, and I will try and stay away from it as much as possible.
Hey, two questions about some legislative moves. One was on business courts. There was a podcast we did earlier in the year talking about a legislative idea to create a separate set of business courts, like a lot of states have, Delaware being the first dating back to the 1700s. But secondly, the legislature also decided that Texas should get out of ERIC, E-R-I-C, which you and I have talked about in the past, the Electronic Registration Information Center, which essentially tries to help keep Texas voter rolls clean. If I moved to New Mexico, and I registered there to vote, then it would take me off here. There's not a replacement for ERIC yet, and I'm curious just what you think about both of those legislative moves. Business courts didn't pass. Is it a good idea? ERIC did pass. What's Texas going to do next?
Yeah. So, I mean, those are policy subjects. They're probably way above my pay grade. It sounds like there was obviously a desire from the business court legislation to create something that was a much more informed judiciary. Look, the system has worked for a long time during my career, but the judges I've always been in front of have tried to be very informed and I think try and give a fair shake to the parties in front of them. So there may have been some extenuating circumstances that someone thought that was a better idea to at least supplement that system that we have. On the ERIC issue, you know, I think we got an enormous amount of good information from ERIC through the years, through a sharing process. Some of that I think they can recreate, obviously, with doing arrangements with other states. And again, I'm not sure why the majority thought that was the right way to vote, and I don't want to second guess them at all. But it'll take money and time to replicate some of the information that we as a state were getting from that.
Are John, we in a bad situation on that now?
No, I don't want to say that. I think that they do need to, I think it served and provided a lot of intel on, for instance, voters who are registered in Texas and voted and were registered in other states and may have voted. It's just kind of a primary. And I'm not sure what the process would look like to go recreate that. Again, can we do it with a number of the other states? Yes. But is it something that is going to be, you know, an effort? Sure. I think it will be. You know, we had some big states that were not parties to ERIC, and that was always a deficiency. I mean, California and New York were not members of it. And that's a lot of people to leave out of the equation. So by no means were we getting 100% of the information we could have if all the states participated in it.
But who in Texas is going to California and New York, John? I mean, they're coming here. We're not going there.
I've seen some reporting in the past several days that California and New York may actually opt into ERIC now. We've seen about what 10 states, Republican leaning states, that have opted out of it now. It's considered a likely possibility that Texas will opt out of it. John, how dangerous is it though if we get to this situation where we have sort of, you know, red states doing a system and blue states, so-called blue states, doing a system where we're not completely integrated and working with each other to make sure that people are not voting in multiple places?
Now, so it'll be interesting to see play out. I hope that that's still just a trivial amount of votes, but it depends upon the election that we're talking about. You know, a lot of the ones I think that we found in the last audit that had voted in two places, I think probably the majority of them were people that were owned two homes in two different locations and may not have given the attention to the details. And so when they voted in the second election, I think some of those example, by way of example, would have been people that voted in school district or a county superintendent or commissioner role in the various states. And so I don't think there was this huge history of people casting two votes in two different states. I think you're talking less than 1,000 people is what we found over the course of that 2020 election that would have been involved. So I don't know if the numbers are huge, especially the larger the race.
Yeah, there's so much misinformation and disinformation about voter fraud, though. And I'm just curious, you know, you've dealt with these meetings, you've had these people shouting in meetings and so forth, who are just convinced. Will we ever convince a pretty sizable chunk of the electorate that this is all fair?
So my hunch is no. My hunch is that if you're looking for good, you'll find it. If you're looking for bad, you can find it. And I think that's across the board. So the short answer, no.
My last question for you, John, what do you think the Attorney General's office needs right now on your way out?
It needs Angela Colmenero to stay there until Ken Paxton either returns or if he doesn't, do that next step. But I think she's great. And I think everybody is going to be, you know, wildly impressed with who they have now as the provisional attorney general.
And if Paxton doesn't return, would you like to see Angela in that role permanently?
Yeah, I if she wants to, I think that's great. I don't know. And I'll let Angela speak to her future hopes and desires. But my hunch is that's more of a political position. I don't view myself as a politician. I've never thought of Angela as a politician. I think of her as an extremely gifted attorney. And I think that's what we've got now running the Attorney General's office.
John, the governor clearly has you in his phone somewhere as his, you know, phone a friend when there might be kind of a sticky situation going on. What is the job? I mean, you know, we joked about how you know you don't take the next call, but what is the job in state government? Is there a job in state government where you think, now, if he called me about that one, I would stick around longer than 6 weeks, longer than a year? I might actually stick around a couple of years if somebody asked me to do that.
No, I'm 61. I need to harvest as much as I can harvest, because as the days get longer, the desire to work longer hours diminishes. So I think that's something that there's plenty of capable folks to go in there and do some of those jobs and currently do them.
John, we always appreciate you taking our call, man. Congratulations on all your successes as well. And you made a good point early in the podcast, helping to calm the situation in those two most recent posts that Governor Abbott has sought you out for. Because I think that Wheeler's right and you're right, too. I think you really did that in both of those positions. But best of luck to you, and don't be a stranger
to
us.
Thank you very much.
And John, thank you for summarizing that thought. I have never thought of it as I need to harvest. I take several sentences to say what you said there. I need to harvest. I need to go out there and just grab that cash.
No, it's not. No. And the other thing is, you know, my wife has given up an awful lot for me to do these services. Oh, yeah. And I think that's the other part of it, which is being at home at night and not necessarily down in Austin when she's in Fort Worth. It's time to kind of move on to that next phase of life.
Yeah, Governor Abbott may need to be careful if he calls you again. She may be the one who answers.
He always runs stuff past her, maybe first.
John, thank you for taking the time.
We'll talk to you soon, man.
Bye, guys. Thank y'all.
Hey, guys, before we let you go, just a quick programming note here. You can also watch us live record this podcast. We have it a video version of the audio you are listening to right now,
and a lot of people like to get their podcasts that way. I'm kind of surprised by that.
I guess, you know, for the guests especially, it's good to see them, but yeah, it is neat, and we are doing it now, and you can find us, you can find the Yaltix podcast at WFAA's YouTube channel. Just go to WFA's YouTube channel. Once you're there, search for Yaltix. You'll see all of our previous episodes. You can find us on the website, wfaa.com/Yaltix. And you can also find us if you have Roku. You can find us on the WFAA app. It's WFAA Plus, and we are there as well.
I have the easiest way possible for you to find this.
So don't use any of that.
Let me go right. You know, what's that website again? You go to Google and you search for Yaltix YouTube, and immediately it pulls up our very own page. Like, we're just circumventing everybody here, Jason. And the neatest part is it's got all of the different episodes on it going, you know, back a ways. And it looks really professional, like surprisingly professional for us.
So scratch all that other stuff I just told you. Just go to Google and search for Yaltix video.
Yaltix, and you'll find us, right? No, just Yaltix YouTube. It will take you right to it. And again, very professional. We look legit on here.
Well, tell us, tell our listeners what we have for them next week.
Okay. We are already working on this. You know, I don't know how much you've been keeping up with the border, folks, but you know, Texas,
is something going on down there.
Yeah. There's a few little things going on. Texas has been trying to really, you know, assert itself down there. The governor has really been trying to get involved in, you know, securing the border. Critics call it militarization of the border. At any rate, a brand new tactic has emerged now where the state is actually floating out buoys into the Rio Grande to try to stop people from coming across. And we are going to be speaking with a guy in Eagle Pass. That's between Del Rio and Laredo, southwest of San Antonio, down there on the border. And he's a character, and he's got some really interesting things to say. And he's not just talking to us. He is speaking in court. He is the first to challenge the governor in court on this new policy to float those buoys out there in the Rio Grande. And you know he's legit because he doesn't call it the Rio Grande. He calls it the Rio Grande. So yes, we're getting it border style, and we're going to do that next week. In fact, I think we're going to do an early release on that just to get that out there in front of y'all.
We knew he was legit when he turned on his camera on the Zoom call.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
He looks like he could be an extra in Wyatt Earp or Tombstone. He has the long mustache that kind of like that bows out at the very bottom there as it, you know, gets close to his chin.
Yeah. It makes me jealous.
The leather hat that would make Indiana Jones jealous, and just the experience of the border. This guy's pretty good. Look for that episode, as Jason said, a little earlier next week. We're going to release it a little earlier because we think something might happen legally with this, because this guy is going after the governor to get these gigantic orange balls out of the river that he is on every day.
We'll release it early and you'll know it because hopefully you subscribe to the podcast and you get these automatic notifications when it happens. And again, you'll see it on YouTube as well. What do you do, Jason? How do you get that?
Just Google YouTube Yaltix, right?
Yaltix. It takes you right to it. Hey, everybody, thanks for suffering through our back and forth on this day. We will do it all again soon.